Welcome to I'm So Obsessed, where we talk with actors, artists, and creators about their work, career, and current obsession. I'm your host, Patrick Holland, and today my guest is Emily Hampshire, who is best known for playing Stevie on the Emmy Award-winning series Schitt's Creek. Currently, she can be seen along with Adrian Brody in the epic series Chapelwaite. The show is based on the Stephen King short story Jerusalem's Lot and takes place in the 1850s. It follows Captain Charles Boone, played by Brody, who, after the death of his wife at sea, relocates with his children to the manor he grew up in Maine. He hires Rebecca Morgan, an aspiring writer played by Emily, to help with his children. But there is more to the house than meets the eye. This interview was recorded at the beginning of September over the internet, so please forgive any audio weirdness.
What? Hey, so prepping to talk with you, nearly every article that pops up right now is about an interview you did with Demi Lovato on her podcast. And I see you laughing, and I promise I have an interesting question on this, but there's basically two headlines. One is about how she asked you out on a date, and the other is about how you learned to identify your attraction to other people. And my question actually is, what is it like knowing that if you share something personal, it gets all this buzziness that people you have never met and will never meet are reading stories about it and making their own like judgments about you?
I love that question because it's so interesting to me, this new world of where I can do a podcast with Demi that was, I thought, a really great conversation. And in the context of that conversation, everything that we said in there, I absolutely stand by and think is great. But it's that then people take quotes from there and make an article out of it as if I gave an interview. And what bothers me is that A, family and friends I know don't know the inside of that kind of press industry where I didn't give an interview about my discovering my sexuality. I didn't give an interview about Demi asking me out. I'm just not someone who's going to do a piece about my sexuality or that bothers me. I don't mind talking about it in the context of before having a conversation about LGBTQ+ issues and stuff like that. It feels very embarrassing to me, actually. Like it makes me seem kind of, I guess, smaller than I would want to be. I mean, imagine if I did a whole piece about Demi asking me out. I could.
But well, save that for the book later.
But so, and if this were regular, I mean, whatever, most people would then make that the headline. There's these clickbait headlines. And it's just a really new thing to me because I remember when my dad had me on Google Alerts and every day he'd get maybe a few articles and then a thing about a cow in Vermont, who's in Hampshire, Vermont or something. And now it's like, you can't even get to the bottom of it. And it's all me and Demi.
Well, maybe it turns out that she's actually talking about this cow in Vermont, and it's that the context got lost, you know?
Maybe. Because I know this is very new, but Demi came out as non-binary, and so it's they now, and which I get is a learning curve and stuff.
Well, they and also get. I encourage people to listen to the pod or the podcast or the video if they can watch it, because I do feel like. I was going to make a joke, like our article is going to be Catherine O'Hara has an iPhone 4S, which there's like 12 of us who would click on that. But I think what's interesting is how we do pick up those things. And I can imagine if I shared something personal and having people talk about it. And maybe if it was cool, I would feel one way, but I would be completely embarrassed. I don't know how I would react. But it's just interesting. I'm catching you on this tidal wave after all that too. So thank you for feeling comfortable enough to talk with me about it a little bit. I appreciate that.
No, well, thank you for that question, because that is a very thoughtful question about it. And I'm happy to be able to especially explain that to like my family.
I guess if I had a follow-up, it would be, do you remember a moment, aside from the cow we joked about, but do you remember the moment where you noticed people started noticing you, like that things you did were being written about or shared?
I remember it very well, because I think it was similar for all of the cast of Schitt's, because the show really became popular, like really popular over quarantine. And so I was in Scotland the first time I went outside without a mask. And that was the first time that I got this thing, which is like, which was startling to me. And I love when people yell Stevie. It's always nice because people love the show, and it's so, and Stevie's such like, she's everybody's best friend. But the shock thing is new, and that was my first experience of it. And it's different. I think it's different in the way that it was so sudden for all, but like I've been an actor my entire life. And so I have it, and in such a smaller pool in Canada. And so we don't have a star system in Canada. It's really kind of blue collar acting. And so I could be the lead of 10 movies that went to TIFF and still never got recognized. Or even when Schitt's came on, I would get recognized, but it would be more like, you went to my high school, didn't you? You, and they're convinced that they know you. And because I'm Canadian and polite, I will be like, maybe. I could never say like, do you watch Schitt's Creek? I have become a little more wary of oversharing and stuff, because I used to be just very, when I'm having a conversation with you, Patrick, I wouldn't think of the result of it as much. I think of like, oh, I'm getting to know this cool person, and don't, not even thinking about what I'm saying. And when that gets out of context, especially in print and stuff, it's really like it makes you scared to say anything. And also like going out, I'm not scared of going out. Like I'm not, you know, George Clooney, it, just in terms of like, I probably wouldn't make out with somebody outside now. Whereas before I was making out with everybody outside everywhere.
Like we all do. Like we yes. all do. I mean, that's yes. just a natural thing. Well, I would say two things. One is, I feel like in Scotland, maybe some of that had to do with the fact that your character wore lots of plaid, and he liked plaid in Scotland. You're like, oh yeah. Yeah, like, yeah. You're like an embodiment, like finally the representation we need. And also I think maybe the new headline for our article, out of context article, would be that you implied that I was cool. I'm just going to run with that. And
I thought you were going to take Emily makes out with everyone everywhere, but
I feel like that would be like the sub headline. Cause it'd be like, I have a lot more questions about Schitt's Creek, but I want to jump to your current show right now. And then we can go back. Right now you're doing a show on Epics, Chapel Waite, and I like the way it's spelled, Chapelwaite. I have my Tom Waits shirt on.
Ooh, that's good.
Unrelated, that's good. But it's based on the Stephen King short story, Jerusalem's Lot. What can you tell us about the show?
Well, it's a gothic horror based on a Stephen King short story, which starring Adrian Brody, Academy Award winner, Adrian Brody.
Upcoming actor, you know.
Yeah, yeah. what's interesting is the up and coming actors in it, the three children, Ian, Serena, and Jennifer, these are play Adrian's kids. I mean, not Adrian, he plays Charles Boone. I'm terrible at explaining this show. Not because it's not explainable.
It's got some because depth I get to it.
And I get diverted on sidetracks, which they're such great actors. Like, I feel like the takeaway is you go in for the Adrian, which you know you're gonna get like an amazing performance, and you do, and then you get this bonus of these three kids who will blow your mind. But anyways, to get back to your question, it's basically about this man, Charles Boone, who brings his children back to this ancestral home that he's been bestowed, and ends up having to battle the darkness within. And then I come on.
Then he makes out with everybody.
I come a knocking, and in the guise of being a governess, but really, I'm a writer who has a story that I'm kind of having writer's block, and so I go into this house thinking it's going to be a lot of inspo for me, and it ultimately ends up I find out a lot more, get more inspo than I bargained for, like real stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that this is a drama, and a horror drama, as I've seen it being labeled. I want to be careful of how much I reveal, but I'm going to ask you something very specific. So in the second episode, there's a scene where your character, Rebecca, she comes across like a folio, and it has old letters from her father, and Captain Boone, Adrian Brody, walks in, and your character has to explain how her father abandoned her family and then started a second family. And then she's like, yeah, if you want, you can have these letters. And you're like, I don't know. And then like, you end up taking the letters. It's a small scene, but there's so much in the scene. I love
you so much. Okay.
Oh, sorry. I think that's the new headline. But wait, how did you approach the scene and the reveals in it? And then kind of like, there's not a comedy, but Adrian is kind of funny in this scene. He has like a little funny moment, I think. So
it's just so funny to me that you point out that scene, because the creators of the show will love hearing this, because we've become really great friends. Well, basically that scene is where I knew that my father, who abandoned us a long time ago, was working for the Boone family. And so discovering that in the house and then being caught by Charles was, there was just a lot going on in that scene, a lot of layers and a lot of kind of ancestral information where our ancestry kind of lines up in ways that will ultimately be very enmeshed.
This is a creepy scenario, but I don't mean it to sound like that, but if I were to come to your house and find a leather-bound book with my last name on it and be like, oh, okay, you know, Holland, you know, something, but open it up and there's letters from my father.
I know. Okay, that's great. Then,
okay, but under the guise of also this house and some horrific things that are already weird, yeah, I think there would be some
questions,
possible questions that you'd hope gets answered later.
Yes. I think that's a hilarious scenario. And the only thing that didn't make it that hilarious for me in that scene was that I think there was some backstory about that my father had worked for the Boones, but Charles Boone didn't know that. So it is really like the scenario you're talking about, where I go to your house and find letters from my father. That would be so funny. Not funny, haha, I'd find it funny, but it would be insane. But it actually, if you take it for what it is in the show, it is such a weird, crazy moment to have to explain when you're there pretending to be a governess.
Obviously, we know you from Schitt's Creek. You're a very funny person. You're very funny in that show. It's a comedy. But I think I've always had this theory that the line between a comedy and like a drama is so thin. And so we just laid out a scenario which, for all intents and purposes, could be in a sitcom, but it's in a horror movie or a horror TV show that takes place in the 1850s. How do you navigate that line so it's not funny, if you know what I'm saying?
So this is why we're best friends, because everybody usually asks, like, what are you going from comedy to drama? How do you do that? Or what do you, and not to belittle those questions, it makes sense for most people. But I too think the line between comedy and drama is not only thin, I kind of think those lines blur a lot, especially in the case of like Schitt's Creek. I feel like I have more dramatic moments in that than I was doing this other show, All Monkeys, which was a drama. And, but I was playing a crazy person, and I feel like I have more comedic moments in that. 'Cause to me, that is always, I can't separate them. But to answer your question too, there was a lot of moments where I found the funny in something that either they allowed me to have a little bit of it, but for the most part, it was like, you can't make that a joke. Yeah, the vampires are not funny, actually, in it. They're terrifying, but there was sometimes things that I would find funny that aren't funny when you watch the show. They're funny when you're on set.
Well, I also think, yeah, you have the luxury of like time and thinking about it, and from what I can see, their performance is really wonderful, but I imagine you're not, maybe you are, I don't know. Are you a Daniel Day-Lewis, like, I'm in the character the whole time person? Or you're like, all right, let's get a coffee, and you're talking with Adrian between scenes. Like, I imagine that's what's going on.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if Adrian was a Daniel Day-Lewis actor. What I discovered and love about him is while he's super serious about the work and is present in all the scenes, he does have a sense of humor, and a very good one, and one where he can laugh at himself. I think that is what you do in kind of dramas and dark dramas, where it's that gallows humor, and I have a lot of that, where I find the saddest, most terrible circumstances funny. But also what was so great is that the creators, Peter and Jason Filardi, who are brothers, when I had my first meeting with them, they had said, I was like, why me for Rebecca? Because most people at that time were sending me parts that were just like Stevie. And they said that they really wanted a modern Rebecca, and they wanted someone who was ahead of their time and a different kind of thing that you would expect in that role. And there's probably some outtakes I could send you where I'm laughing about the letters.
Well, I look forward to seeing them as your new best friend now. So I just want to, we've increased now. I'm best friends with the. it's based off a Stephen King short story. I have to ask, what's one of your favorite Stephen King books, or what's one of your favorite like film adaptations of one of his books?
Well, what's so crazy is that when this script came to me, I had just sold my own show that I'm a writer on, and I was reading. Yeah. I couldn't tell anybody about this because at the time it was a secret. And I was reading Stephen King's book called On Writing, and he wrote a book about writing, which is a great book. And I was literally reading that book when this project came to me to play Rebecca Morgan in the 1850s, who is a writer. Basically, she's Stephen King in the 1850s in a corset.
I love this. And also love the fan fiction this can create. Clearly. Congratulations first on selling a series. That's huge.
Thank you.
To have that, I love when people have an extra like beat to their like artistry. So you're an actor or a comedian or now a writer. That's like, it's got to be so rewarding. But then I also have to wonder, like, you're watching or reading his book on writing. I don't know. Did you ever get to actually meet or talk with him? And I'm like, well, I got a question about like how you end in down, on writing. Yeah. Did you have questions for him?
Oh, I would have had a lot of questions for him. And I've tagged him in every post I've made. And even for Halloween, I was Stevie King. I wore plaid and I had like the twins and everything behind me, and tagged him. Never heard anything. I've never actively been like, dear Steven, Steve, but you know, I guess he's busy. But what was crazy was that, so I read the short story, Jerusalem's Lot, before I did this. And there's no Rebecca in that story. So she's an addition, a good one, I think, not that Steven needs any help with his writing. But yeah, there was none of that. And usually Steven, I keep wanting to say Steve. usually Steven puts a writer in his stuff. And so I think it was a great addition by the Filartis to like add a writer, and the writer is a woman. That's fun.
Okay, so the name of our podcast is called I'm So Obsessed. Emily, what's your current obsession?
Well, I mean, my current obsession is design, like interior design, because really? I just got a new place and that's all I'm doing is like going down this interior architectural design rabbit hole. But I was thinking I should not tell you that one because it didn't seem that interesting. It's interesting to me.
Is there a certain particular style or theme you're going for in your home?
Yeah, my home is very 70s kind of. And so I've gotten into Horace Gifford, this architect who from the past, but very much like, how do I explain it? There's a lot of wood and I like modern design, but with like, well, mid-century modern, I guess more, but with a little more hedge to it. I don't know. I've just gone down, but I'm also like super obsessed with arts and crafts. Like I like making things. I make everything. If I want something, I usually make it instead. So my friend Mila is such a movie buff, and she's was a movie critic, and she always wants to get me to watch movies, and I'm like on TV and stuff, and I only watch murder. That's another thing I'm obsessed with, is murder, true crime, and or documentary.
Not the act of murder, but like stories.
No, not okay. Murdering, but that could be the headline.
See, you're learning now, but, Emily.
But so I'm obsessed with that and documentaries, and I feel like if I'm gonna watch a fiction thing, it needs to be for a work reason or going to change my life. And so it takes a lot to get me to watch anything. And so now when she tries to get me to watch a movie, and then she'll look over and I'll be glue gunning something. And she's like, oh yeah, Emily doesn't like movies. She just likes glue gun. And that's all I do is glue gun things.
And are you like a glue gun aficionado where you have like the serious glue gun or like the little first one you get that kind of like,
well, I have the serious one in LA. I'm in Canada where I have the smaller one.
The serious one.
Yeah. The self-deprecating one. The apologetic one.
I'm going to kind of melt, but I won't get really melty.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I melted, not fully.
I want to wrap up, and we do a thing called pick one. I give you a couple of choices and you pick one. It doesn't mean the thing you select is better than the other thing, but let's play pick one.
Okay, yeah. I have a hard time making decisions. I usually want everything, but.
Okay. I forgot to say the most important rule, talk it out. That's what.
Okay.
So first one I have is LA or Toronto. Pick one.
Oh, LA. Cool. Why that was easy for me is just like, first of all, I'm from Montreal originally, and I lived in Toronto, and I do love Toronto, but being a Montrealer, I'm supposed to hate it. And so I can't say, A, that I love Toronto, but also I love LA so much, which is rare for a Canadian, but I think it's because I moved there not for work, and I really kind of made it my home. So yeah, LA and the weather. Yeah, it's great.
The next one I have is voiceover or being on screen. Pick one.
Oh, I mean, God, I thought that would be so easy because my favorite thing about voiceover is like go in your pajamas, doesn't matter what you look like. However, the only thing that gave me pause there was that being on screen, you get to usually tell better stories, I think. For the most part, like if I'm doing voiceover, I'm usually a cartoon, and I'm usually a cartoon boy or ghost, or, well, I played this part called Misery once, like unhappy, angry teenage boys. That's my hit.
I feel like I need to put on some Nirvana right now.
Yeah. So I guess I would my person, me, who I am, is much more comfortable not on screen. And I'm very odd. I am talking this out too much, but I am very the sound of someone's voice matters to me so much that I could not be friends with you if the sound of your voice bothered me.
Okay, I am using some voice altering software, so hopefully this warm baritone.
Where that voice is coming from. Like if you can tell it's an insecure place, or if it's like.
Oh, so you're talking like the intention in the voice. Oh wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I feel like I can usually hear things too. Like if you're, you know, if you're trying to sell me on something, even if I want that thing, I don't want it. I like that tone of selling me.
Or like that right? Wind up tone where it's like, yeah, I know where you're, no, I'm not.
I know where you're going. Yeah, I don't like any bullshit tone. I'd say voiceover.
Okay, here's the last one. And I apologize for this in advance, but pick one, the Friends reunion or a Schitt's Creek reunion movie.
Oh, I mean, this is too easy because 100% a Schitt's Creek reunion movie. I am the only person in the world who didn't watch Friends.
Okay, so we obviously talked a little bit about Schitt's Creek, and you, what's great is you put in really a good perspective how it was pretty much like a small show, an indie show, like a cool comedy nerd. And then it got really big. I have always been such a big fan of Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy. What are they like, and how has your relationship with them evolved over, like, it's like 6 years basically of Schitt's Creek?
Yeah. This flows very nicely because they are so Canadian that to the point where they are so, like, if somebody offers them coffee, like if an AD offers them coffee, they will be like, no. And they will go get the entire crew coffee. And then you feel next to that, like you're an asshole because you're not getting everyone coffee.
They're being too nice.
They're just too nice, so nice. But also so great to have them be our kind of the captains of the ship, head of the show, and showing that by example that there are no egos on set. And so it was such a great place. A great show to work on when you feel like an equal. You're made to feel like an equal to Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy by them. So that's pretty amazing. And since then, I mean, it's just, we have become like a family, especially when we started touring with each other, and we miss that. But Eugene, I have to think to call him Eugene because I still want to call him Mr. Rose.
In all sincerity, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. I'm going to just enjoy remembering this moment. And yeah, I'm going to brag to everyone that you're my best friend now. So.
No, thank you so much.
I want to thank Emily for chatting with me, and I want to thank you for listening. You can watch Chapel Wait on Epics with new episodes coming out every Sunday. Please take a moment and subscribe to I'm So Obsessed on your favorite podcast app. And if you really like this episode, please rate it. Until next time, take care.